In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, how are you doing this fine Saturday morning?
I'm doing well, man. I am finally recovered from the 18-hour stream.
I am barely recovered from the 18-hour stream. That was so much fun, but it was exhausting.
To be fair, you went in not feeling 100%.
Yes, I was pretty under the weather. Probably should not have been streaming, but we gotta give the people what they want.
The people wanted Ben to nearly die. Yeah, that stream was super, super fun. Thank you to everyone who hung out or unlocked achievements for us to be able to do it. It was a really nice excuse to be degenerates for far too long.
Yes, that was great. Like, getting to cube with you for 18 hours. Like, I feel like we really got down into the nitty-gritty of what each of us likes to do in cube.
I also think it was really interesting, as we got more tired and crankier, we started to disagree more in picks.
Yes, the last draft was...
The last draft was a mess. I do not remember it. But, like, the start of the day, I felt like we were, like, super flexible and, I would make arguments for things. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I agree with that. Or, like, and then by the end of the day, I was just like, no, take this. That's wrong. I hate that card.
The last draft, I would say, I think I'm going to take this. And you would say... like, you just make a noise like, nope, that's the wrong pick. But yeah, we smashed it too, record wise like, up until the last draft when I tanked our record.
No, not you tanking our record. We were 19-5 on the day, right?
Yeah, like, but we were 19-2 prior to that, right? Didn't we lose our last three?
Did we 1-2 and then
I think
lost
we finished
first...
a 1-2 and then lost, or maybe
lost the first match. Yeah, maybe that's
I don't
right
know. Or maybe we lost 3 out of 4 or something.
We were, I think, 18-2 at one point. Yeah, that's the best I remember the record being, which is ridiculous, but we are good at cube.
We were running pretty well, too. We had a lot of close wins.
For sure, right? We didn't face any aggro decks until, like, the end of the day.
Oh, that was also what started happening to us. I remember that now. Yeah, that was great. And if you didn't get a chance to hang out, the VOD should be there on Ethan and my channels. If you want to check out, some cube drafts and see us hanging out. So you can check that out, twitch.tv/LordTupperware and twitch.tv/MrMetronome.
All right, let's get into it. What's your trophy leaderboard update looking like?
Well, I think we should do a final count for Ixalan, right? Because next week, set review, Rivals of Ixalan coming right up.
Believe it. Rivals coming out. Okay, what's the final count for Ixalan?
I had 92 total drafts, didn't crack 100. What a scrub.
What a scrub.
Ended up with 32 trophies, 184-85 overall record, and a 68% win rate. How about you?
I did 212 drafts, which may be more than any human being on the planet. My win-loss record was 401-218. That's a 65% win rate with 57 trophies.
Dang.
Oh, you know what we should talk about? What's your most drafted common, Ben?
My most drafted common was One with the Wind, I think, or Bishop's Soldier. It was one of those two. Those were definitely my top two. I think it was One with the Wind.
Yeah. Mine was Sailor of Means, which I think sort of lets you know what I was prioritizing there for most of the format. It was like Sailor of Means, Depths of Desire, then Prosperous Pirates, and then Bishop's Soldier, One with the Wind were fourth and fifth.
Where did the, do you know where the Sailor of Means count ended up?
Over 150, because like one of my last drafts, I got like 5 of them.
Nice. And to give you an idea, I had like around 57 One with the Winds or something, like as my most drafted card.
It's so funny. But that's rare that like, I mean, One with the Wind is one of the best commons overall. And it's rare to have that be your best common or your most drafted common, you know?
I think it's because you and I, with the help of like Ryan and Sasha, identified it way earlier on than most people were doing it.
Yeah, that's fair. How about Vintage Cube? How's that going for you?
Vintage Cube, I was so sad to see I haven't done more drafts than you this week. You just couldn't let me have it. I've got 21 drafts, 8 trophies in those 21 drafts, a 44-19 overall record, and a 70% win rate. So quite a bit back up from my rough start last week.
You're a beast. Yeah, I have 6 trophies in 23 drafts. 45-24, 65% win rate. I have 0-3'd twice, which I am not proud to say.
Oof. Yeah. Ouch.
With a storm deck that just couldn't get there and Jund stuff, which is not a deck I would recommend to anyone.
I almost 0-3'd on stream, and I have never been happier about 1-2-ing. We celebrated hard when I got that win in the third round.
Yeah, that's nice. All right, well, we have a lot to get through today. We got some cube goodies. We've got to finish off Ixalan right, maybe take a peek at 2017 in review. But before we do all that, we want to shout out our new patrons for the week. Yes, that is right. We do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited. It is a way for you to give back to the podcast if you so choose. We have some sweet perks on there for you. You get access to our Lords of Limited Discord channel. You can get access to our show notes before the show comes out. We also record a little pre-show behind the scenes with Ben and I planning out the episode. So you get that on different tiers, and you also get shouted out on the podcast. So this week we want to make sure we recognize Mary, Tim, Kaylee, and Ken. Thank you all so much for joining the fray. We really, really appreciate your support. We can't express how much it means to us.
Yes, thank you so, so, so much. And everybody that's in the Discord, cheers to you guys. It's been a blast hanging out in the Discord.
Absolutely. Yeah, really, really liking it. All right, Ben. So we're going to do something that I don't think we've ever done before. We're going to do a cube draft dive on the round table. Are you ready to have a seat?
I am. This is going to be awesome.
Okay, so we're going to try and do the cards in contention. I mean, it's sort of tough to do that in cube because preferences lead people to value things very differently, but I'll sort of give you, so as to save time, we won't be reading every card because we do have to read all the text of them, but going to run down as many of the cards that pop out to me as I think are relevant. Okay, so pack one, pick one. Cards in contention are Control Magic, 2 blue-blue for the enchantment aura, enchant creature, you control enchanted creature. Mirror Battlesphere, which is 7 colorless mana for a 4/7 artifact creature. When it enters the battlefield, you get 4/1/1 mirror, and then when it attacks, you can tap any number of mirror you control, or untapped mirror you control. For each one you do so, it deals damage to your opponent, and it gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Marsh Flats, that's the white-black fetch land. Nahiri the Harbinger, that's 2 red-white for a planeswalker with 4 loyalty, +2 to you may discard a card, then draw a card, -2, destroy target enchantment, tapped artifact, or tapped creature, and -8 is search your library for an artifact or creature card, put it into play, it gains haste until end of turn, and then at the end of turn you return it to your hand. Hazoret the Fervent, if you're trying to do the mono red life. 3 and a red for the 5/4 indestructible haste, Scourge of Standard. Hedron Archive, 4 colorless for the artifact, taps for 2 generic mana, and 2 tap, sacrifice it, draw 2 cards. I guess also we should name Path's Exile, that's the 1 white, exile target creature at instant speed, and then its controller can find a basic land to put it into play, tapped.
Yeah, the power level's pretty flat here in this pack. Like, there's no cards that really stand out to me, so I think there's a ton of different directions you could go in the pack here. I would also consider naming Elvish Mystic, although it's maybe a little early to take an elf.
I think if it's like Birds of Paradise, Noble Hierarch, or Jiraga Tree Speaker, I'm okay, but taking just a random elf first feels a little below the rest of the pack.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Path to Exile, I love. I think those effects, Path and Swords to Plowshares, are irreplaceable in the cube, and it's very important to have one of them in your deck if you're playing white or have access to white mana. Hedron Archive is Artifact Ramp, which we talked about in the cube crash course, is very good, mm-hmm. but I think it's on the worst end of the Artifact Ramp because it's so expensive. It's kind of what you want after you've got some Signets or a Mana Vault or a Soul Ring or something. Mm-hmm. Control Magic is great, but a little less good in the Vintage Cube because a lot of the best decks aren't creature-centric. But still, you're never cutting Control Magic from your deck. Battle Ball's a great, like, generic target for Reanimator, like a Tinker target, castable at 7 mana. I think it's one of the best artifact threats in the cube. Mm-hmm. Marsh Flats, obviously great, fetches and lands. Even knowing how good fetches and duels are, I've been struggling to make myself pick them highly enough.
Yeah.
And I know how good they are. So that would be very much in contention for me here. Nahiri is great. One of the most versatile planeswalkers in the cube. She often wheels, I've found.
Yeah.
Or at least has a reasonable chance of wheeling. So I think that's something to note with her there. And Hazoret is just a bomb in the mono red deck. Like one of the best finishers you could have in your four drop slot for sure. But I might try to wheel that and to see if mono red's open rather than like first picking it and praying that mono red is open.
Yeah.
So for me, I would narrow it down to Marsh Flats, Nahiri, Path to Exile, and Control Magic, I think. And then I'd probably narrow it down again to Marsh Flats and Path to Exile. Like the fetch land and the exile target creature effect for single mana. And I think I'd settle on Marsh Flats just because like none of these cards really push me in a direction. And Marsh Flats leaves me the most open in the future to take advantage of whatever duels I might see.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think I agree with Marsh Flats. I might also shout out Battlesphere. I just value Battlesphere. It's so versatile. Like it goes.
Yeah, name that. Yeah,
it goes in like any deck. Like you talked about, like it's a tinker target. You can reanimate it. It's just like you ramp into it with artifact mana. It really does a ton of stuff and slots into many different kinds of decks very easily.
And threats in cube, I think, that make bring bodies with them with an ETB trigger are a lot more valuable than ones that don't, because even if they eat a removal spell, you're still left with four mirror running around.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think like objectively Battlesphere is what I would take here, but yeah, Flats and Path are great too. I grabbed Nahiri out of this pack. I was on stream and I think we had come off of a deck, I think like an artifact deck that had Battlesphere in it. So I was trying to do something different. I hadn't drafted the red white control deck that I like a lot in the format. So I wanted to sort of give myself a shot at doing that. And Nahiri is just so good in those decks.
She is.
So that's what I grabbed there. So moving on to pack one, pick two, there's not much to discuss. We got past the channel, which is the green sorcery. Until end of turn, you can pay life to create generic mana. So it's really good at like cheating out a big colorless spell. Like chat was sort of berating me about how good it would have been had we just taken Battlesphere. But that's pretty clear pick there. I think some cards to note that are in the pack are Sulfuric Vortex, which is the one red enchantment that deals 2 damage to each player on their upkeep and players can't gain life, sort of like the best mono red card. There's a Signet, and there is Deceiver Exarch, which is 2 and a blue for the 1/4 with flash that combos with Splinter Twin or Kiki Jiki because it, when it comes into play, can untap a permanent. So it's part of that infinite combo. So those are sort of cards that I want to like keep in mind that exist. But I think it's a pretty clear channel here.
I agree.
So moving on to pack one, pick three. Pretty weak pack here. Cards in contention. Polluted Delta, that's the blue-black fetch land. Godless Shrine, that's the white-black shock land. Sylvan Caryatid, 1 and a green for the 0/3 plant creature with Defender and Hexproof, and it taps to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Sower of Temptation, that's 2 blue-blue for the 2/2 creature with flying. When it enters the battlefield, you gain control of target creature for as long as Sower of Temptation remains in play. I guess there's like a Young Pyromancer, 1 and a red for a 2/1. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 red elemental creature token onto the battlefield. And a sort of scourge of storm decks and players playing draw sevens everywhere. Leovold, Emissary of Trest, that's Sultai, black, green, blue for a 3/3. Each opponent can't draw more than one card per turn, and whenever you or a permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card.
Yeah, I think the best card on this pack in raw power level is Leovold.
Yeah.
That card has been a house on my side of the battlefield and my opponent's side of the battlefield. But after just picking Channel really wants to go into a heavy green deck so that you can cast it on turn two. So I would probably narrow it down like pretty quickly to the 2 lands and Sylvan Caryatid. Sylvan Caryatid obviously matching up with my channel really well, but I don't know for certain that I'm going to end up in a channel deck. Like you really want to open some Eldrazi or Sundering Titan or something busted to channel out on turn two. I think I would hedge a little bit and take Polluted Delta. A lot of times the channel decks end up wanting to be blue-green anyway, and Polluted Delta gives you the opportunity to snap up a Breeding Pool or a Tropical Island, the blue-green duels down the road. So I think I would land on Polluted Delta, but Sylvan Caryatid is also very close there for me.
Yeah, I landed on the Caryatid just for like, I don't know, signaling purposes and trying to like really cut green so that channel was a very easy turn one or turn two play in my deck. But I think Polluted Delta is very, very defensible and very close in contention there as well. So moving on to pack one, pick four. Got a number of powerful options here. There's one of our favorite cards, Wildfire, 4 red sorcery. Each player sacrifices 4 lands. Wildfire deals 4 damage to each creature. There's Elves of Deep Shadow, which is the Green, 1/1, it taps for black mana and deals the damage to you. Riftwing Cloudskate, 3 blue-blue for a 2/2 flying creature. When it enters the battlefield, you bounce a permanent, and it has suspend 3 for 1 and a blue. There's Eternal Witness, 1 green-green for the 2/1. When it enters the battlefield, you may return target creature card from your... target card from your graveyard to your hand. There's Umezawa's Jite, which is 2 colorless for the most busted equipment ever. When equipped creature deals damage, period, you put 2 counters on Jite, and you can remove a counter to do one of the following things. The equipped creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn, or you gain 2 life. Fun fact, Jite against Harsh Mentor is not great, because not only does the equip cost deal you 2 damage, but each activation...
deals you 2 damage?
I was like, sacrifice this, -1/-1 to Harsh Mentor. Why is there a trigger going on the stack? That was not fun. Smokestack, one of my favorite cards, 4 colorless for an artifact.
Daggers?
What?
You've just already decided that I've abandoned Smokestack based on our 18-hour stream.
Yeah, you're off it.
Our favorite card? No, my favorite card. Ben doesn't get to claim this anymore.
Ben doesn't get to claim it. It's mine. No. You can do what you want in on. Do you want in on this?
I want in on it, yeah.
Okay, one of our favorite cards. 4 colorless for an artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a soot counter on Smokestack, and at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player sacrifices a permanent for each soot counter on Smokestack. Sphinx of the Steel Wind, 5 Esper, 5 white, blue, black for a 6/6 Sphinx with a boatload of abilities, flying, first strike, vigilance, lifelink, pro red, pro green. And Jace the Mind Sculptor, the greatest planeswalker, 2 blue-blue for a 3 loyalty with too many abilities, +2 to Fate Seal, 0 to Brainstorm, -1 to Unsummon, and -12 to, well, you'll never get there, but win the game.
Yeah, there's a lot of good cards in that pack. 2 of them kind of stand out head and shoulders above the rest to me based on pure power level. And those are Jace the Mind Sculptor and Umezawa's Jite. Jite is best in like a low curve creature deck, like either mono red or like mono white with some Armageddons or like white black with some Disruption, which doesn't look like we're headed towards based on our first few picks. So I think that would lead me to settle on just like a pretty easy Jace the Mind Sculptor here. And like I said, really wanting to pick up blue-green duels, like for a channel Jace type deck.
Yeah. I also like that Jace 4th seems a little ridiculous to me. It seems pretty late for how strong of a card it is. And I think based on what we have, right, we have like Jace, Channel, and Nahiri, which are all going very different decks, I think. But with what's in the pack, like there's a Wildfire, so maybe that wheels and we can be some sort of like Jeskai, Mana Rocks, Planeswalker deck, or there's a Smokestack in the pack, which doesn't really go with what we have, but like if it wheels, like there's things that you should be aware of that like might come around, and you have like, I think now sort of 3 different directions with some overlap, which I like to be early in a cube draft just because you're never going to be short on playables.
No, never.
So I also grabbed the Jace here. Pack 1, pick 5. You see a Cryptic Command. That's the 1 BBB for the choose 2, counter a spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand, tap all creatures your opponents control, and draw a card. There's Day of Judgment, 2 WW, destroy all creatures. There's a Thoughtseize, 1BB, target player reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card from it, that player discards that card, and you lose 2 life. There's a Pestermite, another piece of the Kiki Jiki Splinter Twin combo deck. There's Avenger of Zendikar, 5 GG for the 5/5 elemental. Enters the battlefield, you put a 0/1 plant creature token into play for each land you control, and it has landfall. When a land enters the battlefield under your control, all plants you control may get, you may put a +1/+1 counter on each of them. Pretty sick combo with that Sylvan Caryatid you picked up, which is also a plant. And there's a Genesis Wave, which popped out to me because we have Channel, which is 3XX. Reveal the top X cards of your library. You may put any number of permanent cards with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield, then put all cards revealed this way that you didn't cast into your graveyard.
Yeah, I have done some filthy things with Channel Genesis Wave, this iteration of the cube.
Really?
And I'd never done it before, and it was awesome. Tons of fun. So I would narrow this down, I think. I mean, Thoughtseize is the card I like the best out of the pack, just like on raw power level, but that's the only color we are not right now, so I think I'm going to steer away from that. Pestermite and Avenger stand out to me the most. Pestermite because I love the Kiki combo and I think it's really strong, but I think having the Sylvan Caryatid already and the channel really want to lean towards green ramp, so I think I would end on Avenger here and really hope to wheel Genesis Wave, which does happen.
Yeah, that was a thought of mine. It's like, I don't feel like I need to take Genesis Wave here if like green is open. And if it's not, it should be a pretty big signal that I should get out of that deck. And I mean, just the Avenger Sylvan Carry added synergy is so strong with them, you know, with Carry added being a plant already, that I thought I should just take advantage there.
Yeah.
Moving on to pack one, pick six. This is probably the last one we'll do, maybe. You've got a pretty weaker pack here. Avacyn's Pilgrim, single green for the 1/1 that taps for white mana. Faith's Fetters, 3 and a white, enchant permanent, enters the battlefield, you gain 4 life, an enchanted permanent can't attack or block, and its activated abilities can't be activated unless they are mana abilities. There's Venser, Shaper Savant, 2 blue for the 2/2 with flash. When it enters the battlefield, return target spell or permanent to its owner's hand. Braid's Cabal Minion, one of our favorite cards in the cube, 2 black for a 2/2. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player sacrifices an artifact, creature, or land, so a sort of mini smokestacks effect. And Chandra Pyromaster, red planeswalker, 2 red, 4 loyalty, +1, deal a damage to target opponent and a creature they control. That creature can't block this turn. 0 to sort of, that's the draw ability, right? The exile the top card of your library, you may play it until end of turn. And -7, exile the top 10 cards of your library, you can choose an instant or sorcery from among them and cast it 3 times without paying its mana cost. What do you think here?
This pack is poop soup.
Yeah, not a ton that lines up with any of the like 3 routes we have so far.
I would be trying to decide, I think, between Venser and maybe like Avacyn's Pilgrim.
Yeah.
I think I would settle on Venser as just like the most versatile, powerful card.
Interesting. I would think with 3 green cards in the pile, you would lean more towards Pilgrim. I guess you didn't take Carry Added.
I would still be hoping to be blue-green good stuff, I think. I would have a Delta.
Yeah.
But I think Venser, like, I think Avacyn's Pilgrim is the worst one drop, maybe with the exception of, like, that dude that adds black that does damage to you.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, like, at the bottom tier of one mana rampers, and Venser is just super versatile and always good.
Yeah.
Or almost always good.
Yeah. I have a, like, I mean, it's going to sort of be, what I'm about to say is going to counter what I took, but the 4 drop slot in cube is, I think, like the easiest to clog because that's where cards start to get good.
Oh, I agree.
That's where like planeswalkers are. And I think Venser is a very strong card, but definitely in the bottom of 4 drops.
That's interesting.
That's what I think. So like with a Jace already, then I'm like, oh, now I have this Venser and I'm just like worried about where that 4 drop slot is going to be so early. But I mean, definitely think it's a powerful card. I think with the removal of Venser the Planeswalker that could like blink things, it got worse too.
Interesting. I don't ever remember that Planeswalker.
What?
I don't even know that I know that exists.
Yes, you do. Okay, Venser the Sojourner. 3 white blue.
Oh yeah, I do. All right.
+2 to blink something. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I missed that card. Oh,
I do too. That was in this cube. So good, and they took it out. That makes me so mad.
Yeah, I totally remember that card. That wasn't in last year either, was it?
No, it wasn't. I think that's when they took it out, was last year.
And they took Gargadon. They took everything from us.
Yeah, I think Venser and Avacyn's Pilgrim are right. I took a flyer here again on a deck that I, for similar reasons, for taking Nahiri first. I had not drafted the Braid's Smokestack deck yet, and I didn't feel like I was missing out on a ton in this pack. And so I was like, well, I can take Braid's here, and if Smokestack wheels, like I know it exists already. So if it wheels out of this pack, then I can move in on that deck. Or if it doesn't wheel, I'm not missing out on a bunch here. And I got rewarded pretty handsomely. Like, we got a bunch of good cards for that black-white deck. We got a Gideon Ally of Zendikar next. Monastery Mentor. I don't know how, but both Marsh Flats and Path to Exile, your pack one, pick ones, wheeled.
Whoa.
Yeah. Followed that up with a Duress, an Adanto Vanguard, and then, boy howdy, there's that Smokestack. And I ended up getting a pretty sweet version of the deck. Not quite as sweet as the one that we got to pilot in the 18-hour stream that you had drafted prior, but when that deck comes together, it is really fun and really powerful, I think.
Yeah, you 3-0'd with this deck, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Played a really grindy match 3 against a Reanimator deck, and in game 3 of match 3, ground them down to 0 permanence.
Nice. Get that achievement on lock.
Yeah, for sure. Sweet. Well, hopefully you guys were able to follow that. I know it's a lot of text of cards if you're not familiar with them, but really wanted to give you an idea about how we navigate a cube draft.
Yeah, and you've still got, if you haven't made the decision to like try one out yet, you've still got 15 days, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Hop in, give it a shot.
That feels so good. 2 more weeks of cube.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so happy. All right, so to extend the cube segment of the show, I wanted to talk about some cards that have stood out this iteration. They always sort of like swap in some new cards, or maybe because of cards that have been swapped in, other cards become more powerful, but some cards I've been super impressed by. Usually it feels like they are just jamming in cards from the newest sets without like thinking about them. And this time around, I've been really impressed with a lot of the additions from Ixalan and Amonkhet block, specifically Scarab God and Hostage Taker. Surprise, surprise, like cards that are bombs in Standard or bombs in Limited are very good in Cube. And Hostage Taker especially has like really impressed me with being able to steal artifacts. I imagine it might be less good in non-powered Cube, but in this Cube, it feels brutal when your opponent casts it.
Yes, I agree.
And you've sort of turned me on to these as well, but all the hand disruption creatures, Kitesail Freebooter, Mesmeric Fiend, Brain Maggot, Tidehollow Sculler, all of those creatures that when they enter the battlefield, you look at your opponent's hand and you can grab a card from them, or Kitesail Freebooter is the duress version of that, grab a non-creature spell from their hand, but those cards have just been really, really strong, and I don't like it when my opponent drops them on turn two.
Yeah, those have been some of my favorite cards in Cube for forever. Like, when your opponent casts them, you just groan. And when you cast them, you feel great. When I first started my stream, Tidehollow Sculler, like the art on Tidehollow Sculler was the backdrop to my stream.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Your boy Tidehollow, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is maybe the second or third iteration of the Cube where Leyvold has been there. That was one of the cards we had in our roundtable discussion, but that's the one that sort of hoses draw sevens, and whenever you get targeted, you get to draw a card, and that card is just obscene.
Yep, really tough to cast, but if you can make it work, really, really busted.
Yeah.
I've also been impressed by a couple more additions. Those cards that you named all been very impressive. Search for Azcanta, the one in a blue for the enchantment that lets you like filter your draw step and put it into your graveyard.
Yeah.
And it flips into Azcanta, the Sunken Ruin, that lets you dig for non creature spells. That's been great in Reanimator. It feels like it slots very naturally into that deck, and even just like as a value engine seems pretty good in blue white, etc. And Hazoret has been, as we talked about, like mono red. When they cast that on turn four, you're just dead probably. And a couple new cards that I don't remember being impressed by are Deathrite Shaman, the black green hybrid mana for the 1/2, known as the one mana planeswalker.
Mm-hmm.
So you can black exiles instant or sorceries, right?
Right.
And somebody loses two life, you can pay a green mana tap to exile a creature to gain two life, and you can tap to exile a land from a graveyard to add a mana to your mana pool. Card's been super impressive, and I think goes very well into a bug control deck like black blue green with Leyvold. I've faced that deck a couple times and it was very, very impressive. I drafted it once and I 3-0'd with it. So that was super cool to figure that out. And then I've been very impressed by Animate Dead and Necromancy this time around, and just Reanimator in general. I remember thinking of Reanimator as like a very fragile deck in Vintage mm-hmm. Cube, like a combo-y kind of all-in, like folded to a counterspell or a piece of discard. And it has seemed very robust. And I've wanted to play Animate Dead and Necromancy just as one-ofs, like not even in a Reanimator deck.
Like just in a black deck?
Yeah, just in a deck that has access to black mana. I've been very impressed by how resilient Reanimator's been. I've been consistently playing it in the finals. My Reanimator decks have done well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember that about Vintage Cube.
That's so funny. I had the exact same feeling about Reanimator from previous powered cubes. Like, just felt like, yeah, it folds to a counter spell, folds to a single removal spell. Because, like, you're dumping a number of resources into getting your one big fatty into play. And turns out that's pretty good still.
It's felt great to me. Like this iteration of the Cube.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it doesn't feel like it's gained any pieces.
I know. I don't know why it feels so differently, but it really does.
We also had a list of some cards we feel like have been underrated. I mean, our boy Ryan Sack shouted a couple of these out on Twitter. Remand and Sheldock Isle feels like they've been going pretty late. I'm not sure what that's about. Like, Remand is so good.
Yeah, that's one in a blue, counter target spell, return it to its owner's hand and draw a card. Like, it's just time walk, draw a card.
Draw a card, yeah. I think people get hung up maybe on, like, the fact that it doesn't hard counter it. Like, they get to do it, but it's, like, such a brutal tempo play. And God forbid it's, like, countering something that your opponent has put some energy into doing. Like, they've cracked a Black Lotus or used a ritual or anything like that. You know, it's a really, really strong card. We've been touting lands as high picks in Cube from our Crash Course, from the round table, from our streams, like duels and fetches. So fetch lands are the ones that can find like the land types. So like Marshlats finds a plains or a swamp, and those can then fetch the dual lands, like the beta duels or the shock lands. So those are all really, really high picks, I think.
Yep, I would agree.
What else do you think is going too late?
Balance, we're madly in love with this card. It wheels. It should never wheel, I don't think. There should always be some deck that's got artifacts and planeswalkers that wants a balance in every draft pod. Skullclamp has been wheeling at times. I think Skullclamp is one of the best equipment in the cube, along with Jitae and Sword of Body and Mind. Those, in some order, are the best three.
You think all three of those are better than Batterskull?
Yes. I don't even think Batterskull is in contention for me for anything.
Huh. Okay.
Batterskull is, like, super dorky and expensive and replaceable in my experience.
Oh, man, I want to get into some stuff with you here.
It's a hard stance. Yeah, we probably don't have time. But
we probably don't have time because you love Wurmcoil Engine, and those cards, I think, fit similar roles to me.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we don't have time. We'll never hear this discussion.
And then just what we already talked about, a Mesmeric Fiend, Tide Hollow Skull, or Brain Maggot, those cards continually overperform and continue to wheel, and I don't think they should. And then Draw Sevens just let you do some of the most busted stuff in the cube, and I think people feel like they want to have cards that combo well with Draw Sevens before they take them. Like, they right. want to have a Fast Bond, or they want to have, like, Moxes or whatever. And it doesn't work that way. You've got to take the Draw Sevens highly and just trust that the stuff that's going to be good with them will come, because it will. There's so many cards in Vintage Cube that are good with Draw Sevens.
Right. There's, like, only four Draw Sevens. Maybe there's five. I think there's only four. So, like, if you see one, you got to take it. Like, all the other stuff is plentiful. The mana rocks, maybe you'll be in Storm, like, maybe you get a Fast Bond. But even if you're not in, like, a gross combo deck, you can probably find a situation or draft a deck where you have more fast mana than your opponent, and so you're drawing a couple more cards than they are. And when you get to cast a Draw 7 on turn 1, like, do something gross, like, I don't know, Mana Crypt land, something like that, you, like, are just miles ahead of your opponent.
Or Fast Bond, land, Time Twister, like you did several times during the 18-hour stream.
That was gross. But but also, they make your mulligans so much better, too. Like, yeah. When you have a couple of Draw Sevens in your deck, you feel so much better about mulliganing, because you know that you're getting another shot at seeing a Draw Seven when you go down to 6 or go down to 5, and then it's going to make your mulligan not as punishing. They're really good cards.
Yep. A few overrated cards in Cube. We have a contentious one here. I think Ancient Tomb is slightly overrated in the Vintage Cube.
I just can't even with you. In the show notes, I saw that and I wrote, honestly, how dare you?
You would probably have that on the underrated list, wouldn't you?
I think it's just rated. I think it's underrated by you, but I think it's just quite rated. Like, I don't ever see it go late, and when it wheels, I'm not surprised. Like, I just think it's a really strong card. I think being able to go turn one Signet in this format is so strong. Being able to go, like, Landmark Signet or Ancient Tomb Signet is one of the strongest starts you can have.
Yeah, I think it's very good. I just don't think it goes in every deck. That would be my contention.
Oh, I agree with that. I've cut Ancient Tomb before. I think, like, you can have color commitments or whatever, or not want to lose a bunch of life if you have, like, other things that lose life for you.
So, and then Chrome Mox and Mox Diamond. Chrome Mox being the one where you have to imprint a card and then tap to add mana of any color, and Mox Diamond, you have to discard a land when it comes into play, and then it taps to add one mana of any color. I have a hard and fast rule about those two cards. I only put them in my deck if I have Draw Sevens. Or lots of card draw. Other than that, they've just consistently underperformed for me over the years, and I've kind of made that rule for myself the hard way.
I would like to make one caveat. I think Mox Diamond can go in a deck that has Crucible of Worlds as well. Ooh, because yeah. You discard the land so you can replay it. And Chrome Mox, I think, is worse in Vintage Cube because so many decks where it goes in have a critical mass of artifacts, and you cannot imprint an artifact on this. So yes. Like, so often I'm like, ooh, Sphinx of the Steel Wind, this will tap for white, blue, black. Nope. That's an artifact. So, like, Chrome Mox, sometimes you don't have as many options as you think you do.
Yeah. And then another one, the last one here, is Consecrated Sphinx, the 4BB for the 4/6 flyer. And whenever your opponent draws a card, you get the option to draw two cards. This card's busted, but, like, it just never survives. It dies to everything in the Vintage Cube. Dies to Necrotal. Any piece of removal almost that your opponent has kills Consecrated Sphinx. So I think it's so rare that you untap with it that I don't think it's a bomb.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never cutting it from a blue deck that can cast it, but I don't think it's a super high pick.
Yeah. Like, it goes from being one of, like, the most busted, like, maybe top 10, top 20 cards in Legacy Cube to, I think, much, much worse in this Powered Cube.
Yeah, just kind of middle of the road in the Powered Cube.
Well, we could talk about Cube forever, for 18 hours even, but we want to give Ixalan a proper send-off here. As we will be doing our Rivals of Ixalan common and uncommon set review next week. So let's talk about this format. This has sort of been a pretty contentious format among Magic players. I think a lot of people, as we've said, have written this format off early. I think a lot of pros think it's, like, the worst limited format ever, the worst limited format in a long time. And that has not been our experience, yeah?
No, I've really enjoyed the format, and I think I've learned a ton from this format. Much more so even than I learned, like, I enjoyed drafting Hour of Devastation a lot more, but I think I learned a lot more and improved as a drafter a lot more drafting Ixalan.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I totally agree. I think I enjoyed Hour more, but I think it didn't teach me anything about drafting.
I think one of the biggest things that came from that was our beard breakthrough. Mm-hmm. when we ran that episode. Do you want to recap that for everybody?
Yeah, so, I mean, me especially, I'd been struggling in the format. I went through, like, a pretty dry patch of, like, I think it was maybe 30 drafts, I want to say, with, like, 4 trophies in there, maybe. Like, a lot of 2-1s, a lot of 1-2s, and I was really struggling. And I remember one day, like, Ryan Sachs came into my Twitch chat, and he just sort of, like, took the reins. Like, he was like, oh, I'm really, like, doing well in this format. And I was like, what are you doing that I'm not? And so we just, like, I started drafting. And I would be like, this is the card I want to take. And then he would almost certainly have a different thing. And I would just be like, that seems crazy to me, but I'm going to take it and see what happens. And the thing that I took away from that was that I was drafting the format like I was drafting any other limited format. Like this sort of like BRED acronym that I feel like you learn early in limited, which is sort of a way to take cards in order. Bombs, removal, evasion, aggro, and dregs. Is how I learned it.
Really? I learned it as abilities and dudes.
Oh, abilities and dudes. I mean, I think it's a sort of a similar idea.
What is dregs? Oh, like last pick?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So, but, you know, valuing bombs and then valuing answers to bombs and then valuing evasive creatures over other things. So the BRE of bread we can agree on. but that isn't really how Ixalan works because the power level is so flat. There's also the part of this format that is difficult, which is the train wreck possibilities are much higher in a tribal format, because if you sort of stick to a tribe early and then find that that's not open, you're going to not make playables probably, or the power level of your deck is going to be fairly low. So those two things, like figuring out tweaking bread and that taking those like removal spells weren't great because they were so clunky and the creature power level was so flat, we needed to switch that. And the fact that One with the Wind, specifically from the enchantment side, and Pirate's Cutlass from the equipment side, were so strong and just like buffed up any creatures and then made them outclass other creatures on the battlefield, made those higher picks than they normally would be. I mean, we're so used to, as you've said before, we like grew up on limited resources. We're so used to auras are bad, enchantments are bad, you're going to get 2-for-1. But that's not really the case in this format.
No, riding a One with the Wind on a 1-drop or a 2-drop to victory with your opponent never having removal was very common. And or blanking like a single removal spell with a dive down.
Yeah, right. Dive down became a card that I think most people wrote off in set reviews to being like, oh, you just need this in every blue deck because every blue deck you have should have One with the Wind, probably, because it's the best blue common. And your opponent has one shot, right? They have the Hamilton. They're not throwing away their shot, but they do. They just like go to contract killing it. And you're like, nope. Dive down, trade 1 mana for 5 mana, you lose.
Yep. And I think one of the other big misconceptions about this format, at least in my opinion, was that there were only 4 decks to draft. Like blue-green Merfolk, white-black Vampires, Grixis Pirates, and or Naya Dinos. Like, I think the format was, if you did more than 25 drafts or whatever, I think you found that the format was like much, much, much deeper than that. And that there were niche archetypes, not even niche archetypes, like just blue-white commons was like a great deck. Like Bishop, Soldier, Territorial Hammer Skulls, Pious Interdictions, One with the Winds, Water Trap Weavers. Like, that was a deck. Like if you drafted the best blue and white commons, it was a deck and it was very, very good. And Black-Green Explorer, I don't even think ended up being like a niche deck. I think Black-Green was just one of the best like dirtle color pairs and was a very real deck that like probably a seat per draft was supposed to be drafting some flavor of.
Yeah. I mean, you don't got to convince me that people should have been dirtling in this format, Ben. I think that's the other thing. So like, I think that was the real breakthrough for the format. And I think the beard episode was sort of a turning point for us. Like it was, I think us maybe carving out the format. I mean, really, packaging a lot of stuff that we had heard from Ryan and Edude about how they were succeeding and putting it in sort of like nice, neat terms, but also figuring out the dirtle aspect of this format was something that like I'd never done before. Like I just sort of was getting frustrated with aggro, like losing with red, white and not having a lot of agency over my draws or my deck building. And I started to like see how much you could do with like blue or green based multicolor control. And while I think that deck is like not as good as I wish it was, I definitely think it's something to be aware of, and that if everyone at your table is drafting an aggro deck, like, you can get a pretty sweet, very viable control deck with a lot of powerful spells that people aren't casting because they don't want their curve to be higher than 4 CMC or whatever.
Yeah.
You have learning how to draft tribal sets is a big breakthrough here. Well, can you talk to that?
Yeah, I think there was a ton of really good takeaways for me here. I was really hesitant coming into the format about drafting tribal sets because I have not been very good at drafting them historically. Like, those are the sets I've been the worst at, have enjoyed the least. And Ixalan started off that way for me. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, you know, I drafted, I train wrecked a few times, and then I had like some good decks that just lost to like Hostage Taker and Whatley. Like, I played against some of the best cards in the set in my first 5 or 6 drafts, and I just remember feeling like terrible. Like, we're gonna have to do a podcast about this set for like the next 3 months. Like, I hate it already. I'm gonna lose a bunch. Like, what am I gonna do? And then just talking with you and with Ryan and everybody else, I mean, we keep saying it, but just learning how to draft this format in a way to set me up for success was like a big breakthrough for me. So the idea that like it was okay and maybe even probably beneficial to be in multiple colors, like in your first 4 or 5 picks, like to have like a very archetype specific card in different archetypes in the first 3 picks was probably the right place to be, as opposed to like maybe having 3 vampires cards or 3 merfolk cards or something. And just learning that like maybe, and this was kind of something I decided for myself, that I wanted to avoid green, because once right. we like had established early on that like green really was only good if you were merfolk, that was super committing. So essentially, if you were taking green merfolk cards, you were taking green blue cards, and then if you had to abandon them, it was a disaster because it was a really hard to make a deck like out of other green color pairs that was really good. Like red green dinosaurs wasn't great. Green black was kind of, at the time, we hadn't really explored Dirtle.
Explored? Anyone?
Oh, I didn't even try that. Pun not intended. And green white kind of just had felt unplayable most of the format to me until the very, very end. So just like learning all of that, and like we hadn't really talked about drafting with preferences like we did on the last episode with Ryan, but that was really what I was doing, right? I was setting myself up with the highest possible chance to end up in a good aggressive beard style deck, and learning how to do that was a big leap for me in drafting. And I think another big takeaway from this format for me is like how we evaluate cards and then how those evaluations change and maybe influence our pick orders. So I thought it would be cool to take a look back at where we thought the top commons were at the end of our first like look into the format, episode 14. This is our first episode after the common and uncommon set review and our rare and mythic rare set review. Maybe you could run down for everybody where we thought the commons were.
For each color?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So we had white, we had Hammer Skull first, Interdiction second, and Bishop Soldier third, which is about, I think, where we're going to end up here at the end of the format. Blue is really interesting. Man, I remember our set review of blue very vividly because you were pretty down on the color, and I was like, oh no, it's going to be like blue's aggressive. Like, look at all these like cheap creatures and tempo creatures. But I also had like Storm Sculptor as number 3, like a dummy. So we had Water Trap Weaver first, Shaper Apprentice second, and Runaground third. Not quite where we're going to end up, as you see, no one with the wind in sight. Black, Vanquish the Weak first, Contract Killing second, and Skullduggery third. So valuing that removal in various forms. Red, we had Fire Cannon Blast first, Stormfleet Pyromancer second, and Oof. Unfriendly Fire third.
Ouch.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. There's a pretty big miss there on where Red wanted to be, as we'll see. And green, we had Tashana's Wayfinder first, Deep Root Warrior second, and oh boy, Pounce third.
Ouch again. But I, in my defense, I wanted to get that off the top 3 green commons the whole format.
You did in your defense, but it was still there in episode 1 of post set review. And we sort of ranked the top 5 commons overall as Vanquish, Territorial Hammer Skull, Fire Cannon Blast, Water Trap Weaver, and Interdiction 5th.
Yeah, those top 5 commons, we have some of them in there that are still in there.
Mm-hmm.
But a big thing for me, looking back at that first episode, I also had a note in there about commons that have impressed and overperformed. And I'm just going to run through like that list. So the list is Vampire Zeal, One with the Wind, March of the Drowned, Mark of the Vampire, Skullduggery, Deadeye Tormentor, Headstrong Brute, Thrash of Raptors, Jade Guardian, Pirate's Cutlass. So we've got a lot of cards on that list that like belong in the beard philosophy.
Yeah.
One with the Wind, Mark of the Vampire, Pirate's Cutlass, all 3 of those in the E enhancements of beard. And then like the cheap combat tricks, Vampire Zeal, Skullduggery. I'd identified that those were overperforming and were doing maybe better than Ruvel, maybe not. I don't remember what was in my head at the time, but this list is super interesting. Like, this list lines up exactly with the Beard philosophy. What I didn't do was start to pick these cards higher for some reason. Like, we didn't move up One with the Wind. Like, I had identified that it was impressing me, but we didn't move it into our blue top comments or Pirate's Cutlass. Like, I still wasn't picking 2 weeks into the format or a week into the format, whenever this was, I wasn't picking Pirate's Cutlass higher. So after talking with Ryan last week, you know, about like evaluating cards initially in a set, I think a big takeaway for me for this format is that if I think cards are doing better than I thought they were going to initially, I need to be willing to change my pick orders more quickly, maybe to experiment and find out if those cards actually are as good as they seem to have been performing in games, either for me or for my opponent. And I think a lot of, like, we identified earlier that these cards were good, but maybe like took talking with Ryan and Sasha to like actually lead to the Beard episode, which was like maybe two weeks later than this. It was episode 18, right? 3 weeks later.
Yeah. I think you have it written down to 17, or I think it's 17. Yeah. But yeah, three episodes later.
So just being more willing to trust what cards I've identified are playing well in games.
Yeah. That's a really, really good takeaway. I think there's a lot, at least for us as players and drafters, to take away from this format in terms of what has helped us grow as Magic players. Like, the Beard philosophy, mildly figuring out Dirtle Town, learning how to draft tribal sets, which I think one of the main things about that, learning how to draft tribal sets, is what we've identified as like staying super open in the first few picks. You talked about that as maybe being in multiple colors. I think there's also something to be said about not taking tribal cards, like taking cards that are just going to be good in whatever deck. Like, Hammer Skull is going to go in any white deck. Bishop Soldier going to go in any white deck. One with the Wind going to go in any blue deck. I feel like there's been a lot thrown around about One with the Wind being like just a good Merfolk card. No, it's like a deck in and of itself.
And I think the concept of like picks, looking at picks 4, 5, and 6 as like signal points, like for when you see a gold card to move in, that really helped me a lot too. Like, really identifying that section of the draft, and maybe it'll be different for other future tribal sets, but being willing to like set aside a portion of the draft where, okay, I'm really going to look at these cards as big signals and maybe look to move into those archetypes and get rewarded.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we want to close out the format by looking at the top commons and where we ended up. And you'll see that it's pretty well aligned with the Beard philosophy. First and foremost, Pirate's Cutlass, best common overall.
Yep, think so.
Yeah, I mean, we just really kept moving this up and up and up. And then I think this sort of just generally became regarded as the best common in the format. It's going to go in almost any, if not any, deck you draft. It's keeps you the most open. It's going to enhance your creatures so that they outclass other creatures of similar or greater CMC. Really, really strong card here. In white, I think we're going to land on Hammer Skull first, Bishop Soldier a very, very close second, and Pious Interdiction third.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, what about blue?
Blue, we've got One with the Wind, number one. Water Trap Weaver, number two, and a nod to Dirtle in number three, Sailor of Means.
Yeah, that feels right. I like my boy Sailor of Means. In red, again, favoring the aggressive two drops, Fathomfleet Firebrand first, and Tilinali's Knight second, and Fire Cannon Blast third. Now, Fire Cannon Blast is still a fine removal spell, but to be able to have it scale up for any CMC, you have to have Raid, right? You have to be able to attack to kill anything of significance with it. Otherwise, you're probably just killing a 2-drop with it. And we have a little honorable mention here to Thrash of Raptors. I think it wasn't until really the end of the format that I realized how highly I should be taking that card in red aggressive decks.
Yeah, it's just very good. Black, these are all like super, super close, but we got to put them in an order. Number one, Vanquish the Weak. Number two, Skullduggery and Skymarch Bloodletter tied. And then in the number three slot, Contract Killing. All four of those, I think, are very interchangeable and very, very good.
Yeah, for sure. I think it like, depends on what you already have in your pile, what kind of deck you're drafting. Like, you know, in Dirtle decks, you're taking Contract Killing highly. In Vampire decks, you might be taking Bloodletter above everything. It's really tough to know. Those cards are all, I think, really flattened out towards the end of the format. And then green, a nod to enhancements and a nod to, if you're green, you probably want to be Merfolk. River Herald's Boon first, Deeproot Warrior second, and Tishana's Wayfinder third.
Yeah. And then some top common rankings overall. Number one, actually, maybe we should go 5-1.
Yeah. Count them down, baby.
Make it exciting. Number five, we've got Pious Interdiction. Number four, Bishop Soldier. Number three, Territorial Hammer Skull. All three of our top three white commons cracked the top five commons overall. Yeah. Number two, One with the Wind. And number one, no surprise, Pirate's Cutlass.
Yeah. Enhancement, enhancement, aggro, aggro, removal.
Yeah. And that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is why blue-white is one of the best decks in the format.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Bishop Soldier, Hammer Skull, and One with the Wind are brutal cards together. All right. Ready to say farewell to Ixalan.
Yeah, goodbye, Ixalan. You will be... Well, we're not going to say goodbye, goodbye. I mean, we're going to be drafting a pack of it still with Rivals.
I can't wait to have the episode. I really liked that in our Devastation, the episode where we, like, saw what changed with Amonkhet cards. I'm excited to see how the Ixalan cards change with the addition of Rivals coming in.
Yeah, I am as well.
So, as it is our last episode of 2017, this will probably be coming out on or just after the 1st of January in 2018. I wanted to take a look back at some of the things for myself as a streamer and some of the things for the podcast that really stood out. I always get pretty like reflective towards the end of the year. I don't know about you, but just sort of think about like where I was at the beginning of the year and where I am now and what I've accomplished. And one of the biggest things for me is the growth of my stream. I mean, when I really started like doing this, I don't know, more seriously, like setting an alarm to do it or like really carving out time to grow my stream when, you know, there's no monetary gain or anything. You're just like sinking time into this. Back in March, you know, I had like a bit of a follower boom there. I remember like having just cracking like 400 followers in April, I think it was, and then doubling that by the end of the month. And then when they introduced the affiliate program, hitting affiliate status, getting people like subscribing to my channel even before I was partnered, that was incredible. Having some like celeb sightings in my channel, like Chris Pakula randomly found my stream. And I remember that was he like tweeted about it. And that was the first time that I got followers for my stream while I wasn't streaming.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's like when you get that first thing, for me, that was like really surprising. I was like, wait, why would anyone do this? Why is anyone following my stream when I'm not even doing it? Amaz, legendary Hearthstone streamer, has popped into my stream from time to time. So those sort of like celeb sightings were very cool for me. I don't know, like some validation. And then, I mean, growing it to getting partnered in September was amazing. And that was a dream of mine for many years. Like I started streaming over 3 years ago, but only started really doing it consistently this year as like making it a goal. And getting to achieve that goal was really awesome. I mean, it's not much different than affiliateship now, but it still is pretty sweet to see that check mark.
Yeah, that purple check mark is real good. And I don't know how, like, back to celeb sightings, you just play it off like so cool when Chris or like Amaz or somebody comes into your stream and I'm just like, yeah, this is awesome. They're here. I can't believe they're here. It's so cool. Like super sweet.
And I think it's also like when I think about the year in terms of my like magic obsession, I think about the stream and I think about the podcast. And again, doing a magic podcast has been something I've wanted to do for a long time and didn't quite know like how it would happen. Like, what do I have that's different to offer to the community than other limited podcasts, and like who would produce it and whatever. And I think just like finding you through Twitch and growing this show has been like one of the things I am most proud of from this year. Like the show is just great. It's really fun to get to focus on seeing the growth of it, seeing it featured on dailymtg.com out of the blue last week.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Incredible. Like, what a huge surprise. Like, I would never have thought that in a million years.
No, yeah. I just texted my whole family like as soon as, because my brothers all play Magic, so I like sent them a text. It was unbelievable. Super cool.
We both went to our first GPs this year. We sort of did our like first foray into, I don't know, professional or high stakes paper Magic. And I thought that was a big win. Like I didn't do very well in it, but I went with two complete strangers that I met through Twitch, which is something I'll get to in a bit. But that as an experience, and also sort of spurred me on to getting in touch with Marshall and Rich Hagen and trying to, get a foot in the door for potentially being on the coverage team somewhere down the line, which is another goal of mine that now doesn't feel so crazy. Like now that I've like made contact with them and have a rapport and a point of reference, and now that my stream is partnered and now that I have a podcast, I feel like I'm a very active member of the community, and all that stuff now doesn't feel so pipe dreamy, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, super cool. And I would echo the first GP thing. Very cool to go to GP Indy and compete. And I'm going to go do that again in January with my brothers for the team GP. And it's going to be super awesome. We're going to be team bands with brothers. and I hope we crush it. And if not, we're certainly going to have a lot of fun along the way.
Yeah, I mean, you guys will just then go crush a bunch of side events.
Yeah, and they both live in Indy, so it'll be awesome. Or no, one of them lives in Indy, rather. They
don't live in Indy anymore. Free housing?
Yeah, free housing.
That's gonna clutch.
Going to be deece.
Nice. Another thing, like getting the stream sponsored and appearing in streamer showdowns were two things that like Twitch chat helped me achieve. Like I was just sort of spitballing like, well, how do I do this? And someone was like, well, here's Lee Sharp's contact info. Like, why don't you tweet at him or whatever? And that's how I got invited to do the streamer showdowns, which I got to participate in a number of times this year, which they're really fun to get to do. And getting sponsored was another thing that people were like, well, why don't you just like contact places X, Y, and Z? And that's how I got my GoatBot sponsorship, which is, you know, it's not a ton, but every little bit helps when you're doing this like not really financially sustainable thing for a lot of your time. So every little bit really helps. And I'm just sort of blown away by the generosity of people in the Magic community in general, or like the friendships that you make in general, you know, like meeting you or meeting the people who live in Pittsburgh, like Jamie and Stunlock, and the generosity of people in Twitch to make things for you. Like, you know, a big shout out to Sweeks, who made the art for like my stream, for your stream, for the logo art for the podcast, our emotes. Like, he's just such a legend, and he's helped out a lot of other streams as well. Schmuck of all trades on Twitter. He made my avatar art that I use basically everywhere I can. He also did this like Eight Nights of Hanukkah art token for each member of the Magic community that he wanted to shout out. And both you and I made the cut, and our tokens are complete gas.
Yeah, super cool.
Salty Pretzels, who made the intro and outro music for the show. We shout him out every week, and rightfully so. The music is awesome. Like, our show is so sweet because of it. Ben loves to hear it every time he finishes editing each show.
I do, every time.
MMP is a member of my Twitch chat and a sub. He made this really awesome like trailer video as a compilation of a bunch of clips. Like, all these people are just sort of doing things out of kindness and out of just generosity, and like, I want to give something back. Is like, it blows me away every time. I can't really like fathom that community that is made from a bunch of people that I've never met,
right, that just love this game and like yeah, doing the thing and like what you do, like the like what you do enough to like do something nice for you, like under no obligation or like self-interest or whatever. Like, they just are good people and want to do something cool because they think you're doing something cool. Like, it's just a great feeling of validation and community. Yeah, exactly what you said. So I would echo that. Huge shout out to all those people: Speak, Schmuck of All Trades, Salty Pretzels, MMP, and just everybody in the Magic community is awesome and has been a blast to be a part of.
Yeah, like unbelievable. I just sort of don't want to like jinx anything, but it feels like 2018 just has to be even better. Like, if like the way things are going, things have been so cool and so great in terms of the growth of the show and the growth of our streams that I'm really looking forward to whatever 2018 has in store for us in terms of our Magic content creation.
I am absolutely looking forward to it as well. And I'm very thankful to have met you and all the people I've met through Twitch.
Yeah, likewise, buddy. I mean, the podcast is a dream come true. And listeners know that I am a bum, but I was upfront about my bumsmanship upfront. You know, I was very clear about that. But the show would not happen without Ben. Like, it just like would not, because he makes it. I blabber on for an hour every week, and then he makes that sound coherent, and he puts music to it, and he uploads it. And all of that would not happen without you. And you are just so, I mean, you're more than integral to the show. You are the reason it happened. So, like, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Thanks. And same. We couldn't do it without you. Tag team effort. Well, before we get too sappy, Happy New Year, everybody. We love you all.
Hope you all ring in 2018 with a lot of great festivities. And we're going to be back next week with our common and uncommon set review of Rivals of Ixalan. I can't believe it. Still can't believe it.
Yeah, a reminder, we've still got our Vintage Cube treasure hunt going on January 15th, the end date for that. If you complete all five, you get entered into a giveaway for a complete draft set. Those achievements, as a reminder, are win the game with your opponent controlling no permanents, check, infinite loop time walk, still on the to-do list, mindslaver lock your opponent, check, win the game with storm count 15+, you've got that checked off. I tried to mooch off you on our 18-hour stream.
I wouldn't have it. I didn't have it.
And the last one, turn 2 an Eldrazi, check, double check, and I've gotten Forspiked trying to do that. Feels bad, man.
Forspiked off of what? Channel?
Yeah, my channel got Forspiked. Oh, because gross. Because instead of playing Llanowar Elves, I played, what's his face, the Soul Ring on a stick, Draga tree speaker.
Oh, right. Oh, I saw that clip. Oh, brutal. So brutal. Yeah, you just get four spiked and mana tithe. I feel like you like wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, like screaming mana tithe or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, send us those screenshots or anything else. You do something sweet in cube, take a screenshot of it, post it to Twitter, tweet at us. I am at Lord Tupperware. Ben is at Mr. Metronome. We also have our own podcast account at Lords of Limited. Come spam our Twitch chats, twitch.tv/LordTupperware for me, twitch.tv/Mr. Metronome for Ben. I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/C/LordTupperware. Some new content up there almost every week. Please come at us there.
If you got any feedback about the show or questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for making this year very, very memorable. And we'll catch you next year for another episode of Lords of the Moon.
See you in 2018, boys and girls.